Welcome to today's episode of Highly Sensitive Money, where we delve into the complexities of oppressive systems and their impact on social justice, inspired by Edgar Villanueva's book, Decolonized Wealth. I'm your host, Diana Yanez, and together we'll navigate through these challenging topics, exploring actionable steps towards creating a fairer and more equitable society. From understanding the concept of decolonizing wealth to exploring the role of new power and redistributing resources, we'll uncover key insights and strategies for dismantling oppressive structures and fostering inclusivity and justice in our communities.
Today, I'll be doing a book review of Decolonized Wealth by Edgar Villanueva. Edgar Villanueva is a principal of a firm called Decolonized Wealth. They help philanthropy become decolonized. He is a member of the Lumbee Tribe, grew up in the region of what is now called North Carolina. I really wanted to bring the book review into the first season just to kind of set the stage. For example, the conversation that I'll be having, that I'll be sharing with Rose Spherick, the co-director of Wisdom and Money, it talks about how money can be a gateway of transformation. And Decolonized Wealth is a book that gives a clear view of like what philanthropy is, both like the benefits and the downfalls of it. And that also, like, Edgar Villanueva does a beautiful, beautiful job of sharing very personally the transformation that he goes through, the way that he alchemizes the pain that he experiences within himself and that he witnesses in the philanthropy section. So he was brought into the system straight out of college and experienced a lot of dissonance, a lot of discomfort with what was going on. And one of the portions that most stuck out to me was when he's talking to an elder in his tribe, and he realizes, or he comes to the realization, that money is his medicine, that working with money is his medicine. And most of us look at money, most of society looks at money like as either something to acquire, there's a lot of greed towards it, or there's a lot of avoidance of it, right? Like people with money are evil. And what does it mean to make it your medicine? And I really relate to that. I think that I agree that for myself too, working with money, working with trauma around money is also part of my medicine from personal experience and just from the way that I'm able to hold it because I've developed the capacity for it. So this book is divided into three parts. He divides it into like where it hurts, how to heal, and his conclusion. And I'm going to go through and basically read my favorite parts of the book. In Decolonizing Wealth, Edgar Villanueva says, philanthropy is the savior mentality in institutional form, which instead of helping, is ostentatiously proclaimed intent, actually further divides and destabilizes society. It's the savior mentality. It's saying, I have the answer, you don't have the answer. It entrenches the problem and keeps things as they are. Philanthropy often doesn't do enough to actually change the causes of the problem it's supposedly trying to serve. Money as medicine is using money to restore harmony. You listen to its sacred power. You don't force it. And isn't that interesting? When I work with Wisdom and Money, that is one of the things that they talk a lot about having people give from something within themselves. Like, here's what a retreat costs, but you're willing to give whatever you want to give, whatever actually flows from you. So talking about part one, where it hurts, there's a couple of key terms that he defines. And he says, colonization asks the one vanquished to become like the one who won, as opposed to just pillaging. Because colonization rewrote history. It rewrote the history that was around before them, and then it erased it. Not only did it say like, oh, these people were savages, these people needed to be saved, it then just got rid of the history too. He quotes Derek Rasmussen as saying that indigenous people believe they belong to the land, and non-indigenous people believe the land belongs to them. And it wasn't always like that. I know in Europe, I'm reading another book, Kabbalah and the Witch, and there they talk more about a more holistic view of like we are part of nature, nature is part of us, more connected, maybe mystical view of the world. But by the time colonization was really like in the throes and land was being stolen, this was the case, right? That non-indigenous people felt that they had a right to exploit He defines a separation worldview. And this is a really interesting idea, that because my body separates me from outside, I try to control what's outside of me, and especially the other who I compete with for survival. This worldview is very much about, like, our well-being is not interconnected. And in fact, I actually have to beat you in order for me to do well. And some people believe that that's true. Some people believe that it is dog-eat-dog world. And they act, they move in the world as if that were the case. I don't believe it's true. And I don't actually think that money believes that's true. Because if I were to, like, make my own currency and try to force other people to take it, like, it wouldn't work. Money is relationship made manifest. I think money asks for cooperation. Money smooths things more than beats others. It's not physical force. He talks about a colonized organizational design, like an organizational design that includes colonization and continues it. It concentrates power. There's a hyper-professionalizing that it creates exclusivity, like, oh, look at my right degrees. Look at the way that I talk. Look at the way that I write, or like whatever it is that I'm doing that's like the right way that I'm in the in crowd. And it reinforces oppression. So when you join, because he talks about joining a colonized organization and then becoming, like, it brainwashes you. It makes you think that it's the only way. And in my conversation with Mike Coyle in one of the episodes on Highly Sensitive Money this first season, he talks about reading Dawn of Everything and how one of the takeaways from that book was that life hasn't always been organized the way that it's organized today. It reminds us that we have choices. It reminds us that things could be different. Whether we have time to make the difference, whether there's a willingness to make the change. I'm just putting that out there that we don't have to agree with what's happening today. So that colonized organizational design, he credits Jess Remington and Joanna Levitt-Sia for that information, if anybody wants to go and look more into that. So here he starts to talk about what it was like to be a person of color within a colonized organization. And he says, as a marginalized person, we're better equipped to navigate differences and complexity. Our thinking and experiences better hold multiple realities simultaneously. Our experiences hold multiple realities simultaneously. And I've talked before about, I didn't realize the white skin privilege that I carried until I moved to the East Coast. I grew up in Southern California, and in East Coast, I look very, like, I could be Italian or Irish or like some other European descendants, whereas my mother looks much more Arab and my brother looks much more indigenous. He looks much more Mexican. And I hold the complexity of, here I am walking around with this white skin privilege, while at the same time, I'm very closely related to people who don't have that same physical look. So I hold the complexity of understanding what it's like for me and what it's like for them. And I didn't come to that learning until much later. Then he calls out a couple of solutions, of possible ways that things can be changed, like how granting funds can reinforce colonial dynamics. He says that when a granting foundation focuses on rock star leaders, it's actually bad for the organization because it's putting everything on the rock star leader as opposed to the organization as a whole. When grantors look for immediate results, then they create a burdensome amount of proof that the recipient is actually worthy. When people suggested that I actually open a nonprofit because the way that I offer my coaching is so accessible, I knew in my heart that that's not the route I wanted to go, because I didn't want to spend time justifying why I was doing what I was doing with the money that was given to me through grants. I didn't want to spend my time applying for grants. It creates a second job. So then Villanueva talks about the savior complex and destructive colonial leadership. He says intense competition amongst non-whites because the space feels so limited. Because we can't attack the white overseers, we attack each other. And one of the key things that happens in his book is that he compares the philanthropy sector to a plantation. And people who work inside of the philanthropy sector are what's called like the house workers. So they have some privilege, but that privilege is at the cost of the separation that it creates them from people who are not inside. Again, here he talks about the saviorism mentality, that saviors won't touch the underlying systems of privilege and power because that's what grants them their status and position in the world. This is one of his main arguments against philanthropy, against how the fact that philanthropy doesn't really create change. Then he says that to escape this drama triangle, everyone must take full responsibility for her and himself and learn to cultivate purpose and worth internally without needing the other players in the power dynamic. What does that mean? It means that for people who are trying to be the savior, they have to see, like, what's in it for them if they save the other. For people who are the victim, what's in it for them with being the victim? How is giving away their power helpful? So the focus on individual leaders is a reflection of the colonizer virus. And he says we have to shift our obsession with individual leaders to a focus on organizational design, which tends to be taken for granted and is invisible in most of our institutions. So a focus on organizational design, a focus on how do we create systems that can move forward, that don't put so much stress on individual rock star leaders. And he has this beautiful section where he points out that the best adjusted indigenous were the ones who respected their own culture and knew how to navigate wider society. So going back to people with marginalized identities can hold the both and, that's what he said was most adaptive. It's both knowing where you're from, because if you reject where you're from, you're rejecting yourself, and also knowing what's around you. Because if you don't know what's around you, you're going to be, you'll be used up by the system. You'll be chewed through and spit out, right? Like if you don't understand what the system is. And he quotes Donna Chavez as saying, integration means we can lift up what we have, and at the same time, we bring in what is needed. Reconnecting is becoming whole. Reconnecting is becoming whole, which is needed from trauma, and colonization was very traumatic, is very traumatic. The problem, or the thing about becoming whole, is that it can require going through what we fled from. The thing that we're most afraid of is usually the thing that we have to go in through. And this reminds me, I'm reading The Divine Comedy, and in it, at the pit of hell, Dante sees like the devil in the middle of ice, and he's got like these people that he's chewing on, and it's all like pussy and gross. It's like a super nasty scene, the way that he describes it. And Virgil, who is human reason made manifest, that's guiding Dante through hell, tells him we have to go all the way through. So what they actually do is that they climb the devil, and then they start to climb, like they climb on top of him, and then they start to climb downwards, like they turn around and start to climb downwards, because the only way out is through. The only way out of hell is through the pit. So they have to hold their breath and go into this like slimy ice, I guess it's like water underneath the level, and just come out the other side. And when he comes out the other side, I think Cato is there to welcome them. And Cato's like, Dante, you're disgusting. Like, you're full of pus. You smell like hell. Because he just literally spent a week in hell. I think it's roughly 7 days. Or maybe 4 days. I think it's 4 days in hell, 3 days in purgatory. So he has them, like, go and, like, take a bath. Because he's so nasty. And I think maybe that's what trauma recovery is like. You have to go all the way through. And I know that whenever I've been in the pit of like integrating trauma, it's a lot about taking baths, you know, like self-soothing through baths. We see that even the Divine Comedy is reminding us that the only way out is through. The way to become whole is not to reject the parts of us that have been hurt, but instead to integrate them, to see how they continue to affect us. And that's what he's calling for in the philanthropy sector of like, hey, if you have an endowment, where did your endowment come from? Just be curious about that. Start out there. Where did the money come from? Then we go to the next section of how to heal. And he says, every obstacle can be incorporated and can become an ally. Another beautiful aspect of authentic wholeness. Oh, this is my favorite part. A free imagination is key to overcoming limiting beliefs. One of my teaching tools is called Money in Full Bloom, And one of the steps that I outline there for people is to be able to voice your best self and believe in your capacity to get there. It is so important that we see feeling confident in our money, feeling good in our choices as possible. Because when we have a free imagination, then we can work towards it. But if our imagination tells us it's not possible, then we're going to just stay where we are. And then he has a couple of different steps. He says, first, you got to grieve. You have to apologize. You have to listen. You have to relate. You have to represent. And then repair. So grieving, again, the only way out is through. And he says we all have to grieve. Both people who were colonized, people who are the colonizers. And he points out that white people are often paralyzed by guilt and mired in avoidance. Instead, we've just got to grieve with it. And we have to allow all emotions so that we can be whole. He calls out for apologies. And he says, a sincere apology does not seek to erase what was done. Instead, it can clear or settle the air and reestablish connection. He says, white people of wealth need to let go of their white fragility and step up, start to do the work. And BIPOC need to dismantle internalized oppression and see how they too are also infected by the colonizer virus. That internalized oppression is a sneaky, sneaky one because it's hard to see it. I've got so many experiences of like, oh, wow, I am experiencing misogyny from myself. Like, you know, just like, you're like, oh, this stuff is deep. We have to listen. And I love this quote, because wealth tends to have an isolating effect, which is only heightened when ivory towers are situated and built to exclude and alienate the people seeking funding. Listening is key to undoing the rigid structures of colonization that keep wealth from flowing. This is one of my favorite. This is how I see Wisdom and Money really put this into action, where they invite people to listen to themselves through contemplative practices, which honestly means like meditation, like mindfully being with themselves, seeing what comes up, and to question, like, why do they need the research that they need? Why do they need the ivory towers? The next step is to relate. Relationship is the goal. And he has this quote that's just, and he says, new power operates differently, like a current. It is made by many. It is open, participatory, and peer-driven. It uploads and it shares. Like water or electricity, it's most forceful when it surges. The goal with new power is not to hoard it, but to channel it. Again, the goal with new power is not to hoard it, but to channel it. It's not to have all of the power for myself, but it's to see where is it most effective? Where is it most needed? It's kind of like a money as medicine, is listening to money. What does money most want to do? In a view of relationship, in a view of connection. Then he says, represent, right? Move money to where the hurt is worst. Once you've listened, once you've established relationship and connection, what's next? You have to give mutual aid without stipulations. You have to trust somebody. I wrote down, dale el dinero en vez del mandado. Like, trust somebody to do what they're going to do that they most need with money. Like, and there's research shows that giving actual cash is most beneficial because it gives people more freedom with what they're going to do. And people often know what they need more than somebody in an ivory tower. And he points out that when you're accustomed to privilege, equality can feel like oppression, right? He calls on us to democratize funding so decisions are made by those who need it. They are the ones who know what's needed. And invest in the more beautiful world you want to see in addition to divesting in what causes harm. And here I'm thinking about, there's so many new ways that we can invest and actually building the good. And then he says, repair. Once you've established all of this, once you're listening, once you have relationship, once you have equal, like actual representation. And for representation, he says, if you're adding people of color to a group, make sure it's like 30% so that it actually is representative and that it's not just like tokenizing. It's not just one person speaking on behalf of all people of color. Then you can move towards repair. And we often want to start at repair because that's the outer work. That's the more flashy work. But you got to go inside and make sure that you're not recreating systems of harm, which is why you need to apologize and build relationship and listen. So he calls out that poverty is a result of public policy and theft. We know that. We know that. It's not a question. Like, hunger is not a requirement. Like, we don't need people to be hungry in this world. We don't need people to go into bankruptcy because of medical issues in the U.S. Like, the U.S. is such a wealthy, wealthy country. It's a disgrace, really, how poor the safety net is. So decolonizing wealth is eliminating the racial wealth gap. And he says that reparations are a viable way forward. Like, actually make reparations. Actually give money back to the people that it was taken from. Give resources back to the people that it was taken from. And he calls out for baby bonds. Baby bonds would make a meaningful difference. And I'll include a link to baby bonds. I don't know how much traction they have, but it would, and other things along those lines, but like universal health care, child care, access to housing. Then in conclusion, he has beautiful, beautiful quotes. He says, altruism also is a linear concept. Altruism moves in one direction, from the haves to the have-nots. It is a one-way flow of resources. Altruism is the poster child for white saviors. Altruism doesn't really change the systems that create inequality. What's more important is creating connection and seeing how we're interdependent. He says that community care is the main way that Indigenous people move. He quotes Robin Wall Kimmerer, reciprocity is a matter of keeping the gift in motion through self-perpetuating cycles of giving and receiving. Through reciprocity, the gift is replenished. All of our flourishing is mutual. And Desmond Tutu, when we assault another's humanity, we assault our own humanity. When we say that person, that so-and-so who thinks differently than me is not fully human, is not fully aware, we're actually hurting ourselves. Every person wants to be acknowledged and affirmed for who and what they are, a human being of infinite worth, someone with a place in the world. We cannot violate another's dignity without violating our own. Violence, whether in words or deeds, only begets more violence. And you may say that I'm a dreamer, but really, like, what other way is there forward? Our well-being is interconnected. Again, I just want to point out that we're born into a system and few of us have the bandwidth to question it. So here, Edgar Villanueva was put in a position where he really was like the dissonance that he felt, the discomfort, the like, what the fuck that he felt working in philanthropy, being the one who had access to so much money and then had to decide who it was given to and seeing that it actually wasn't creating change. Like that like, here's what I'm supposed to be doing. Here's what's actually happening. Here's what I see in the world. And none of it coming together, he started to question it. The experience itself made him question it. For most of us, just getting by takes up all of our attention, which is probably like part of the way that capitalism was set up. For most of us, just getting by is really the main focus. So I call on people to begin where you are. Start where you are. All moves towards solution and connection are valid, even when you realize it might have been the wrong path. Start where you are. Do the work that's in front of you. We get to dismantle the old, to get rid of what no longer works, while building the new. Connect with organizations and people who have solutions that you're excited about, solutions that you want to be a part of. And consider, what are your gifts? And where are they most mutually beneficial? What is your magic? What is your gift? What is your medicine? Where is it most beneficial? I know for myself, one-to-one work, workshops, translating money concepts, that's where I shine. Policy, not so much. And that's okay, which is why I support people who know that area of the world. And I also acknowledge where I'm most useful. What is it for you? You're a highly sensitive person who's bringing social justice into your money relationship. Where can you do the work? Where can you stay engaged? I highly recommend reading Decolonized Wealth, following Edgar Villanueva's work. And please reach out if you have any questions. And thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Diana Giselle Yanez. Did you enjoy this episode? Please share this first season of Highly Sensitive Money with others. To learn how you can upskill your money relationship, join the newsletter over at allthecolors.net. That's allthecolors.net for network. Take care, and remember, you've got what it takes to feel good about your money.